Support for the show comes from Atlassian. With a new story about AI coming out seemingly every day, it can be hard to know what it all means for you and your job. Atlassian thinks there's a lot to be excited about in the AI-powered future. Even right now, Atlassian's AI-powered software can help you boost productivity by eliminating menial tasks, generating insights, and helping you find information about projects, policies, and processes. No matter if you're a team of 2 or 2 million, or if you're around the corner or on another continent, Atlassian software keeps everyone connected and moving together as one towards shared goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Support for this episode comes from The Current Report. From data privacy to the future of TV, retail media, and beyond, the world of digital marketing is constantly in flux. So how can you keep up? Well, The Current Report is there for you. Each week, marketing leaders on the cutting edge give you the latest insight. So if it's creating a buzz, they'll be talking about it. Subscribe to The Current Report wherever you get your podcasts. Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher.
And I'm Scott Galloway. Rebecca, cue the cool in the gang. Get down, get down. Oh, my God. It's Tuesday. It's not Friday. What is going on? That's right. Too much of a good thing is cocaine, but it's also Pivot twice a week. What stands between the tyranny of technology marching into the aisles of Dover and taking over Britain? A jungle cat, a journalist who wants to be the godmother of podcasting, and an angry professor whose career has come totally off the fucking track. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. One plus one doesn't equal two. It doesn't equal three. It equals Pivot. Oh my God. Pivot twice
that
a week,
Kara. That is not exactly the theme song that I was envisioning for our first, second show.
How exciting is this? How exciting
I
is this?
I cannot believe how excited I am right now. I can't even tell you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. This is like ground up Cialis on a Chipotle burrito bowl in that we will enjoy, our listeners will enjoy it as they're consuming it. And then for the next 72 hours, blood will be rushing to a new organ, their brain.
Scott, really? That's really how you want to play this one. How about, isn't this great that our listeners can hear us twice a week now because that's the way it is.
We
appeal to their higher nature rather than their lower nature. But
2X.
That's fine, Scott. That's fine. Scott, how was your Thanksgiving?
You know, same thing, same as it is everywhere. Cracker Barrel and then a strip club.
Okay. All right. Anyway,
and by the way, I just want to say,
listen, you got huge blowback. Speaking of Thanksgiving, when people were eating turkey, they also gave huge blowback for endorsing Bloomberg on CNN. Would you care to comment?
That was a good segue. I got enormous feedback both online and I went on Michael Smirkanish, who I think is wonderful.
No, I don't. Michael? I don't go on CNN, but go ahead, move along.
He's like this rare species where they captured on film and say we thought it was extinct 2,000 years ago, but there's actually a lot of them in the forest. They're called moderate. Mm-hmm. And I just love him. I think he's thoughtful and interesting. Anyways, I wrote that article urging Bloomberg to run, so he said, come on and talk about it. And I went in and kind of went through my dance around why I think a centrist is important and Mayor Bloomberg running what is would be the 12th largest economy in the world and that he was right
on
most issues important to most important to Democrats. I got wild blowback. I mean, one of the many wonderful things about this podcast and what we do is I hear from people, and people were thoughtful to the point. We're really thoughtful, but generally they thought, okay, we don't need another billionaire. This is another example of crazy white billionaire privilege that people are really bothered by the stop and frisk.
Yeah, that
policy.
Was just me too. That was just my feedback. But go ahead, keep going.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are with you. And that for him to kind of get in late in the race and use money to buy kind of, I won't say buy his way onto the stage because he's not going to be able to get on the debate stage, but I would say it was running kind of 3 or 4 to 1 negative to positive. And I can't figure out if it's a vocal minority or I have totally overestimated his potential for candidacy. I thought he would be much more welcomed into the race.
Not if he had done it earlier, because he's such a choker. Maybe if he had like done the little work, the little spade work initially and not been such a coward not to get in early. He should have gotten in earlier. What was the problem with that? That was He just, I think he probably looks at a poll and he doesn't like it and then he changes his mind. Billionaires are capricious. Whenever anyone is offered a job anytime, I'm always like, think hard, because it's a very, even if it's a very nice person, I think Bloomberg's quite interesting and people like working for him, but it's capricious. And so he should have done it from the very beginning and done the work and the spade work that others did. And it drips up. And he should have addressed the stop and frisk thing a lot earlier, except I'm so sorry, because now it looks simply, it doesn't look reflective. It looks politically expedient. And so I know you're saying people liked it. Like, you don't want to appeal to that. I'm sorry. That's just not any way to govern. It's not any way to run for office. And I want Tia Leone to be our president, as she is on the outgoing Madam Secretary now. I'm very excited about that.
That's hard to argue with. And I just want to be clear. I don't think people liked stop and frisk. And I think it's obviously aged very poorly, but I think that one of this cohort in the middle, if you will, I think a little bit of, I don't want to call it political incorrectness, but someone who's not what I'll call full woke appeals to that segment of the voting population that may be the key cohort in terms of who stays or who gets into the White House. But anyways, I got a lot of pushback. How was your Thanksgiving?
I did not endorse anybody. My Thanksgiving was excellent. It was on many pies and many Amanda Katz relatives. So it was quite something. It was quite a lot of people, big family. Meanwhile, my kids were in Japan, so it was good. I'll be seeing them soon. We're going to do Thanksgiving with my kids too. Anyway, Scott, time for our big story breakdown on our second show of the week. Let's talk streaming wars and how different players fared on the first big holiday weekend. Did you? Why don't you give us your definition of streaming wars and the major players? And did you watch a lot this weekend?
Yeah, I always watch a lot of TV because it was the weekend. But you have a lot of people say, well, if you really want to talk about the streaming wars, you need to also include broadcast television, who have their own offerings, and YouTube. But
and
I
movies
would say
and movie theaters
and movie theaters. Yeah, that's right. But you have you have the 10-ton gorilla, you have Netflix, you have everyone from Comcast getting in, HBO Max, Disney. I mean, they're all lining up. It's very strange, but you found some data on actual movie going.
And it's reflected in my own life. I thought about going to the movies about 10 times. I didn't go once, which was really interesting. Because it was not just because I have a small baby, but it's inconvenient. The weather was cold. So there was a 16% decline from last year in movie ticket sales this holiday weekend. And what was interesting is one of the movies I did want to see at the theater was The Irishman, which I then waited to see on Netflix. I did not like it, by the way. But Disney's Frozen did very well. This is Disney's first major movie since launching Disney Plus. And I would have rather I didn't go see it. I was going to go see it because I like Frozen, but I didn't. And my movie going has declined so precipitously, and it's largely because of it's sort of like the shopping thing. It's relatively inconvenient compared to when it's easier to get other things, and I feel badly about this, and at the same time, movie theater has never done me any favors unless it's sort of like a Landmark theater or something like that. So one of the things with The Irishman, it was only in select theaters for 26 days, which major theater chains were furious about. It did pretty poorly at the box office, but it seems like a success on the platform and getting Oscar buzz. They don't, of course, release their numbers the way movie theaters release, but why even release movies to the theaters? I just watch online, and I watched it on a large television, but I didn't like it. That's a separate thing. But it just sort of changes. Behavior is changing rather rapidly.
Yeah, if there's a couple of interesting things going on. The first is, and e-commerce is the right analogy. If you go into a mall and you spun yourself around, would you know that it's not 2005? The innovation around in-store shopping, there's some people who've done interesting things, Restoration Hardware or Sephora, or even Tesla's dealerships are sort of interesting in the mall. Apple, if you think about the stores, you probably wouldn't know it wasn't 2009. Whereas shopping online, the speeds have gotten faster. There's all different ways to pick up your stuff. You get it in 5 days, 3 days, 24 hours. Now in some cities, 48 minutes with Amazon Now. The same thing has happened to movie viewing, and that is if you were to walk into a movie theater, you might not know it wasn't 2005, whereas the home viewing experience in terms of what's offered up online, that programming or that platform's ability to predict what it is you want to watch next. You have 4K now, 8K, TVs are wonderful.
Content is great, actually. The selection.
Unbelievable.
I went through the Netflix like trailer thing, and they do it really well. You can watch them for 2 seconds and get a sense of what the shows are. What's great, I like picked from there, and I used mostly Netflix. Even though I did get Disney Plus, I didn't use Disney Plus because it's not on the whatever system I had. It wasn't on the Comcast system, I don't think, but it was just interesting how how easy it is. And you're right, the experience is of getting up and going out is really different. But I think the issue is, why don't we get the numbers for these things? I mean, will they ever release numbers, these companies?
No, because I think the numbers on an individual basis are actually pretty thin. But all they care about is reporting. I mean, that's one thing that's happened across all of finance that I think is a bad thing, is that it's gotten to the point where companies can make up. They invent their own metrics. And whatever shows them in the best light, you know, when the markets were valuing companies purely on subscriber growth, they kind of ignored their profitability and said, this is how many subscribers we're adding. And then they had different terms for EBITDA. But yeah, they don't have any incentive right now to release their numbers. Do you find in terms of your home viewing patterns, what do you find yourself watching the most and least of, and what is it at the cost of?
I sort of graze. I was watching that Four Weddings and a Funeral. One of the new one by Mindy Kaling. I grazed around to watch a CBS, which I didn't want to buy, but I ended up watching it through Comcast, which was, you know, my Comcast Xfinity account. I watched the Irishman, obviously, which took 14 years because it was so long, and some other things. But I graze a lot, and I don't pick or choose one. And I guess it's sort of like owning, as I said, a lot of magazine subscriptions. We're going to move on this for a second, but what can get people in theaters, do you think? Like, I'm going to go see the new James Bond movie in theaters for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I really like to see that movie in a big theater, and I don't even think the home experience is good enough in that regard.
Well, just as the only time people, we were talking about TV, the one thing that people don't talk enough about that is the common thread through all of this is the one thing they're watching is they're not watching commercials.
Right.
And if you look at all television, what it has in common is that, as I've said for a long time, advertising has become the tax that the technologically illiterate and the poor have to pay. And everybody else just watches ad-free TV now. The only time people get off their butts and actually get excited to go into a movie, I think it's either for a kids film, because kids programming is so important to just kind of like get them doing something or get them off your back. And also these big budget $200, $300 million Marvel superhero films.
Star Wars.
But
Star Wars.
The scary part, that's right. But the scary part around all of this is that I think one of the things that's tearing our nation apart, you know, in addition to algorithms that put you in one pole or another run by unethical people, I think there's a resegregation of our society. And that is, through the 80s and the 90s, there were a lot of efforts, and my school was integrated with busing. We did a good job of introducing different socioeconomic and different ethnic groups to each other. And I think it was a wonderful thing, because my two best friends, one was a Mormon kid going to Stanford, and I thought, okay, he's smarter and harder working than me, but he's not that much smarter and harder working than me. Maybe I could go to a good school. And then my other friend, Ronnie Drake, was a black kid from Crenshaw whose only way to college was football. And it provided kind of those different economic and ethnic groups gave me not only aspiration, but it gave me empathy. And as a society, we're resegregating. And when I generally believe people don't like to go to the mall or to the movies anymore, because they're scared of each other, and they, for the most part, just want to hang out in their own economic and in their own ethnic classes. That we are.
You're right. I think that's a very wise thing. After your opening of Cialis and cocaine, you suddenly become woke. But whatever, I'll take
it.
Not in any way. But listen. Speaking of woke, I'm going to move on to another topic.
I want to stop there. I want to ask you something
quickly. I need to get to Jack Dorsey in Africa.
But when I go to the movie theater, I go to the mall. I think to myself, okay, unless I can go to IPIC, unless I can be around, you know, these general like massive movie theaters to me, and maybe it's because I'm old and I see all these young people, I think okay, is this where I want to be? Am I becoming part of the problem? And then we pull our kids out of public school so they can be around people in their own economic weight class. I think it's really dangerous that we're kind of self-casting.
Self-casting. All right. We'll use that term. Speaking of self-casting, I'm going to switch the topics. We've got to get to things. Tight show.
Right. I'm rolling over
you, but you're right. I like
that.
Very wise. These are very wise thoughts. Jack Dorsey says he's moving to Africa for part of 2020. He announced via tweet he'd be moving to Uganda for 3 to 6 months in 2020. He said Africa will define the future, especially the Bitcoin one. He was traveling around and he met Bitcoin owners in Ghana. It's sort of an interesting, I'm not sure, I sort of contacted the Twitter and trying to understand this, and also Square, because he's CEO of two companies. Any thoughts upon this?
Well, sure. The problem isn't that Jack Dorsey's going to Africa, it's that he's going to come back. So I got contacted by CNBC this morning and they said, what do you think of the corporate governance of a CEO leaving and spending 2 or 3 months in a market that accounts for probably, I would have bet, less than 1% of his revenue. I'm like, the only board that would tolerate this is a board that would, you know, tolerate a guy being CEOs of two companies. And what do you know? It's the same board. And this is, in my view, and I realize I sound like a scold and an old man here, but this is just fucking ridiculous. It is, you want to talk about the mother of all paid time off. He's decided he wants to live in Africa for 2 to 3 months while Twitter continues to subterfuge our economy and be a real negative and a real flashpoint for our elections. He's decided I'm going to go roll in Africa for 12 weeks. And a CEO of two companies going into Africa. This is just so borderline ridiculous. And it continues this notion of this idolatry of innovators that the CEO of Ford Motor said, I'm going to go to Iceland for 3 months because the future is around ecological tourism or sustainability or clean energy, right? The board of Ford would go, well, that's all fine and cute. And then the nominating committee would have a special committee and they'd start looking for a new CEO. It is ridiculous. And what's finally, I think, going to put a bullet in Jack Dorsey's Twitter career is that Amazon, over the last 4 years, Jack Dorsey rejoined Twitter exactly 4 years ago. And in that time, I think Twitter stock was at $20 when he joined. It's at like 30 now. It's flat. Amazon has tripled. Apple has doubled. Facebook has doubled. Google has doubled. So his tenure since kind of trying to pull a Steve Jobs, it just hasn't worked. And it's one thing to be CEO of two companies. It's one thing to be CEO of two companies and decide you want to go hang out with rhinos, you know.
Well, he wants to talk about technology. I mean, I think the implications, I think you're right. I think you're right on this. I think he should just quit and have another CEO if he wants to do that. But one of the concerns is this sort of the way that tech people visited the Midwest. It's sort of weird colonizing kind of thing. That said, there's a lot going on in Africa. There are these active tech hubs. Everything is, you know, it's a continent that is finally using tech to move forward. And it's actually a great place to invest from a lot of people I know who do that investing. But you're right. He should do it as another job.
That's a great idea. If he'd said, I'm worth $4 billion. This has been a great run. Thanks very much. Peace out. I'm starting a VC located in, you know, in Tanzania or wherever. That would be amazing. Africa is the future. You can see it's going to come online. And not only that, I got so much pushback online this week for using just the term Africa.
Yeah,
that someone accused me of being a racist by grouping a continent, that it's a group of individual cohorts and cultures. And so fair enough, you know, wherever he decided to go in the African continent. Mm-hmm. But this is ridiculous. The CEO,
where
the
are we going to send you,
Twitter,
Scott? That's what I really
Africa
want to understand. Where are you going to go?
I'm ready.
I was thinking Antarctica.
Floripa, Florianopolis.
I'll get you a Canada Goose coat like I bought this weekend. Speaking of which, I went to a mall to buy one. But you're absolutely right. It's problematic. I'm trying to find out more and I will try to report back later this week. So we're going to take a quick break now, but we'll be right back after this with more Pivot on our first day thing. All right. See you soon, Scott.
Fox Creative.
This is advertiser content from Atlassian.
one of our customers who produces pizza at a very large scale all across the world. Believe it or not, they use AI to review the quality of the pizzas that are created. That goes through a workflow that scans the images of the pizzas and makes sure they visually look like what they should. So it's pretty cool.
That's Sherif Mansour, Atlassian's head of AI. Sherif thinks there's a lot for companies to be excited about on the AI-generated horizon, spanning everything from making pizza to producing podcasts like the one you're listening to now.
There'll be far more jobs created on the other side of this revolution.
Instead of a world of less, Sherif envisions an AI-powered world of more.
In everyone's day job, they're moving from doing the thing to often being an architect of the thing. It unleashes the potential of every human. And I think we can go from a world where few people have access to a high level of intelligence to a lot more people having access to this information. AI is really giving everyone on the planet more resources to do great things. And I'm very optimistic about that opportunity that lies ahead.
Transform teamwork with the power of AI-human collaboration. Start using Atlassian Intelligence for your Atlassian products like Jira and Confluence now. Learn more at Atlassian.com. That's AtlAssian.com.
This week on The Gray Area, writer Derek Thompson makes his case that everything has become a cult. Well, almost everything.
Is Taylor Swift the closest thing we have to a mass cult today?
No, I think she's the closest thing we have to Christianity. It's me.
Find out if you're in a cult this week on The Gray Area, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, welcome back to Pivot. Let's take some listener mail.
This week's Pivot listener question comes from Renzo Santillan. He thinks it would be cool if you guys could talk about the tech companies that are disrupting the logistics industry. He's talking about Flexport, Next Trucking, Envoy, Happy Returns, and any other company that is disrupting this archaic industry. Let me know your thoughts. Thanks, Renzo.
All right, I'm going on here, Scott. You know I had a FedEx issue this week.
Here we go. Here we go. I saw this on Twitter.
Oh, my God.
Go ahead.
They
what
suck.
Happened,
let
Kara?
Me just say, Fred Smith, I'm glad you're getting no taxes, but whatever. But let me just tell you, it was such a lesson. I had something delivered from Amazon and something delivered from FedEx, and I had made a change of it. I'm not going to go into it in detail, but I paid to have the address moved to where I was at Thanksgiving. I paid a lot of money to do that. And they didn't deliver it on time when they were supposed to. You know, when it absolutely positively has to be there overnight, well, they didn't do that.
Right.
And they promised it would be there a certain time. And then on the app, they said it was going to be there. And then it wasn't there. And then they suddenly changed the time without telling me or contacting me or anything else. This was very important papers. And then trying to get through to them, I was on the phone for hours with FedEx arguing. I tweeted at them. You know, I had Bill Gurley tweet me saying I was trying to be famous. Help me. I wasn't trying to help me. I paid money. I would like to know what happened to it. I think Twitter has become a comment system. It was an astonishing display of like total disaster. Meanwhile, Amazon delivered something perfectly. And then I had to return that thing because it wasn't the right thing. And I already sent it off today. I did it all online, all on the app. It was so easy. And it was no questions. It was easy to understand. FedEx, they were literally like, if you want a refund, you have to go to our refund department. We can't stop it because it's in a container and we can't turn it around. We can't do it. It was like literally they're going to get killed by Amazon if Amazon decides just to go into the logistics business. Thank you very much. That is my rant. Scott?
Okay, you're about to have your revenge because
why?
Amazon... Well, Amazon's going into this business,
yes.
And all you need to do is look at S1s. Under the investment section for about 10 years, they talked about how much money they spent on fulfillment. And then a few years ago, they moved their verbiage and investment disclosures from the investment section and the CapEx section to the competition section. And that is they're now saying that FedEx and UPS are competitors.
Yeah, and DHL.
The same way they did with AWS. So they're about to go into this business in a big way. FedEx made the mistake of becoming a profitable company, returning profits to the company. The other big mistake that FedEx made, or I would argue, is it's similar to General Electric. Rather than focusing the CEO's attention on operations and innovation, he's been totally focused on tax avoidance.
Yeah.
And if you look at, I mean, it looks as if the Trump Tax Act to reduce corporate taxes from 35% to 21%. was largely orchestrated by Fred Smith and FedEx under the auspices that if you let companies hold on to their to more of their money, even despite the fact that it's going to increase the deficit by $1 trillion a year, that you will unleash this massive amount of investment in plant, property, equipment, new jobs that will literally result in a nuclear-like explosion of pent-up demand and investment from corporations. And this is what happened. Every company took that money and bought back stock.
Or paid their executives more or whatever. Yep.
But took the stocks up, which has a ripple effect. It's good. They can do things with that stock, but 80% of the stock is owned by the top 10%. All this was a chaser on income inequality. Even FedEx did exactly that. They went out. They didn't increase their CapEx. So this, and what have we done here at the end of the day with this Fred Smith-backed tax plan is we've said, all right, let's pull prosperity forward from our kids and grandkids in the form of exploiting our national debt so we can take stocks up, which largely benefit the wealthy. I mean, like every policy in America, like every corporate lobbyist, it does one thing. It takes money from every cohort in America and transfers it to the wealthiest cohort in history, old people in America who own shares.
Speaking
and own
of
houses,
old people in America,
everything we do is about trying to make those people richer.
I agree. Speaking of someone who is an older entrepreneur, Fred Smith, who really did pioneer this area, is literally the app is terrible. Their customer service is terrible. Like literally, I felt like I was the contrast between them and Amazon. And by the way, UPS actually works pretty well comparatively. But the this is such a wide open space to grab back from FedEx. Like I would never use FedEx again. Like astonishingly, like I really like the experience I had was so bad, and it was so non-innovative. Like you could, they literally was back in 10 years ago. I felt like I was with 10 years ago with them. So let me just say, I know there's controversy about Amazon and delivery vans, and I saw them all over, by the way, this weekend everywhere. Yeah. Amazon vans, Amazon branded vans. They need to work out their issues around all kinds of too speedy, everything else. But boy, their technology part of their equation is flawless, like flawless. And what last thing I'll say is Amanda, who hates Amazon, my girlfriend, is like, I can't stand that it works so well, but it's astonishing. Like, and it's an astonishing because she's just for years tried to use local retailers, et cetera, et cetera. But in the logistics space, someone's got to dominate, and it's certainly not going to be FedEx. Anyway, wins and fails. Well, that's failed to me, but wins and fails, sir. What are your wins and fails?
So my win is, speaking of movies, there's a wonderful new movie called Knives Out, starring Daniel Craig of James Bond fame.
Oh, yes. I heard that was great.
And it's nice. The thing that struck me about it was kids can watch it. It's not for young kids, but I took my 9 and my 12-year-old boys. It's kind of a throwback to the Agatha Christie genre. Mm-hmm. It's cute. There's not a lot of violence. It's got some wonderful actors. I think Daniel Craig is an underappreciated actor. He's a solid actor.
He really is.
And he puts on a Southern accent here and he does it flawlessly. Ana de Armas, I think I got her name right, is just wonderful in it. Toni Collette, who's the star of my favorite movie in history, The Sixth Sense, is in it. It's just a wonderful
movie. Jamie Lee Curtis gave a great interview in
she's
the New
in
York
it.
Times. Yep, she was great. She's great.
She's fantastic.
So you're doing a movie review.
My winner's Knives Out.
All right. Okay.
Knives Out. Your win?
I don't have any wins this week. I don't have any wins. I'm mad.
Fail?
Okay, my fail this week. It's not exactly a fail, but Apple got a lot of heat for changing map lines to include Crimea in Russia. Russia annexed the Ukrainian territory in 2014 under a lot of controversy. Now Apple is reviewing how it deals with international borders on its maps. And so I think that everyone's got to think about this mapping thing, because it's been controversial forever, the idea about maps, but these companies change them when they're operating in those areas. Now, to be fair, they're only showing them to Russian viewers, these maps. So they're letting the lie perpetrate in Russia. And so that's, I don't know what to say. They are following the laws of those areas, but at the same time, it's somewhat ridiculous, and then using other maps for other people. So I don't know what I would do. Again, this is another area where these big tech companies, which have taken over mapping, that would essentially be Apple and Google and some others, are really caught in these bigger social issues. But I don't know what I would do. I don't know if it's a fail, but it's certainly a, another big giant issue for Apple and others and Facebook and others. So I would say that was my fail.
Yeah, but it's like if Apple identified Senator, I think it's John Kennedy, the senator from Louisiana, as being a useful idiot and an agent of the KGB, that would be disappointing but accurate. Mm-hmm. And the way I see this is, that was a bit of a dig and a joke. The way I would see, just in case anyone hasn't seen, Senator Kennedy has now decided to basically propagate a lie that has been fueled by the Russian government, that the Ukrainians meddled in our election such that to conflate it and somehow create this false comparison between Ukrainian and Russian interference to lessen the pressure on the president's criminality.
Agreed. But speaking of Senator Kennedy, that guy is a Russian plant or an asset. I don't know what he is, or a useful idiot.
Exactly.
He's not an idiot, by the way. I've heard from lots of people. He's quite clever. More fail in that regard is Meet the Press for bringing him on the show and not being prepared for that lie to cut him off. Like, that was the worst. Everyone's like, oh, he tried.
I thought Chuck Todd did go after him. Because
this guy had done it before. You do not let him repeat lies over and over again. And it doesn't matter how much you challenge him. You just don't. You cut off the mic in that case. I cut him off.
Well, he is a U.S. senator.
I don't care. I don't care. You're lying. You're a Russian plant. Sorry, no.
Come on. If you want to see Interviews for Dummies, did you see 60 Minutes last night with Susan Wojcicki?
Yes, I did. It was very nice to Susan. She did her job.
They were 60 Minutes was literally so played. I mean, of course, they said they threw out that she had the garage and she has five kids.
Yeah, they just got
and they
to
asked.
It.
I thought at some point Leslie Stahl was going to say, "Can you show me how to use this microwave to heat up my soup?" It was literally like,
it wasn't
good. Okay.
You know, Susan did her job. Susan did her job. That's all.
They got played. 60 Minutes and the Nation, as always, got played by the 1,100 person corporate communications department and the very likable Susan Wojcicki.
She's very likable. She is very likable. And she did her job. I'm not going to fault her for doing that interview. I think she did a good job.
All right, my fail.
Tessie, your fail quick, because we got to get to predictions and get out of here.
Yeah, I know. You're going to get a pedicure with Nancy Pelosi or something. So my fear is, and there was a great article in the New York Times about this, but I think we're studying to the wrong tests. I think we're talking about the wrong numbers, the Dow, unemployment. And the New York Times had this incredible article called Deaths of Despair. And this plays into my favorite thing, macabre topics. But for the first time in our history, our life expectancy is down 3 years in a row.
Yes, I saw that.
And no one ever talks about that. Our life expectancy is now kind of rivals Cuba, and that's not a good thing. And people blame or immediately think, well, people are dying sooner. And it's not that. People are living longer. It's just that there's more deaths, unnatural deaths between the ages of 25 and 60 than ever before.
Yeah.
And they're largely
alcohol, opioids,
and also suicide, which is skyrocketed. And I wonder how much of it we're going to find a combination of income inequality, incredible frustration and anxiety because of, for the first time in our nation's history, a 30-year-old is not doing as well as his parents. And what I've discovered, because I coach a lot of young men, is that it's as hard on the parents as it is on the kids when the kids aren't doing well.
Yeah.
And I think the shame people are feeling, I think the embarrassment, and also not only the income inequality, but this gestalt we have in our society now where everyone's convinced that because we're a meritocracy, because you're constantly having success thrown in your face, that if you aren't successful, if you aren't part of the Google, Instagram economy, it's your fault. You fucked up. So I think there's just so much shame. There's so much frustration. There's so much inequality.
Agreed.
that leads to these deaths of despair. And the question I would ask at the next presidential debate is, what are you going to do to reverse the life expectancy decline?
There's hope.
You know, what's the point of all of this?
A town called hope. We don't have
anyway,
that.
So my loss is, again, I think we continue to study to the wrong test. I think these deaths of despair and the amount of anxiety and pain from loneliness, from shame, from economic anxiety is such a failure of our society. It means that we as a society, it means whatever this experiment is no longer working as well as it used to.
Well, we should use those statistics, be aware of them. A friend of mine was an artist, and she put a heat camera on the Golden Gate Bridge to show how many more suicides were happening than people thought there at the Golden Gate Bridge. It was an art installation. And she thought we should have a national suicide number so that people, rather than any of the other numbers we use to decide what success is. I thought that was a really interesting, it was many, many years ago, it was interesting, but I think you're 100% right. I'm going to have to cut you off, unfortunately, and make you feel despairing, but what is your prediction, your very quick prediction, of maybe spending this time of year to make us feel better about our despairing lives? Where what is your prediction this week, Scott Galloway?
My prediction is Twitter goes below $25 a share and an activist steps in.
Okay. All right. What activist is that? In that's right. They don't have dual stock, as I wrote about.
That's right.
They do
that's
not
right,
have
Kara.
Dual stock. So that is a ripe. That
you
is,
got an,
they've been around. They've been around the basket before. I've heard from lots of these people a couple of years ago.
You've got a media platform that's trading at a old media-like multiple. You've got a CEO who's the CEO of another company who's deciding to go hang out in Africa for 3 months. And you have a platform that has become a national iconic means of communication and governing because we have a very strange president. This is just incredibly ripe for an activist. So 2020, look for a Dan Loeb, a Jana Partners, look for an activist to come in.
Loeb is perfect. And, Loeb is very attuned
and take
to
a run at Twitter.
Interesting. All right, Scott, that's a really good prediction. Oh my, you veer from being crazy to being so wise. It's really, you're like the wise men. You know what I mean?
Thanks for saying that.
But in any case, it's time for us to go. We'll be back later this week to talk more about this for another episode. Also, tweet at us at #PivotPodcast and email us at pivot@voxmedia.com. Scott, this has been an exciting time.
Two times a week. Daddy needs a new pair of shoes. Come on, twice a week.
All right, read the credits. Get us out of here, Scott.
I don't have
Galloway.
The credits in front of me. I'm totally at home in my studio.
Today's show was produced by Rebecca Sinanis. Eric Anderson is Pivot's executive producer. Thanks also to Rebecca Castro and Drew Burrows. Make sure you're subscribed to the show on Apple Podcasts. If you liked our show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Pivot from Vox Media. We'll be back this week for another breakdown of all things tech and business.
Support for the show comes from Atlassian. Whether you're exploring space, making pizza, or producing a podcast like this one here, chances are your team is marching into the AI-generated horizon. Atlassian Intelligence is unleashing a new era of teamwork. You can use Atlassian's AI-powered products for everything from brainstorming ideas to finding information to summarizing huge documents, all by using normal, everyday language. Atlassian AI-powered software like Jira and Confluence help teams accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how you can transform teamwork with the power of AI at Atlassian.com. That's ATLASSIAN.com. Atlassian.